and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program, very remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, August 4th, 2020. Families of soldiers who fought for the independence of South Sudan say they have been forgotten.
The orphans and widows like me have been neglected by those who are alive. I lost my husband during the liberation struggle, and I didn't grieve so much because I knew he sacrificed his life for our freedom.
And a former Sudanese refugee becomes a governor in Darfur.
I was appointed as the governor to help with the conflict resolution skills that I learned in the United States. So it is a critical time full of tragedy, but at the same time, I have the knowledge, the capacity.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some families of South Sudanese who fought for the independence of their country say the government is doing very little to fulfill promises made during the struggle for independence. The families say the government has neglected them for years. The Constitution of South Sudan requires the government to support orphans, widows, disabled war veterans, and care for dependents of fallen war heroes. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Juba.
51-year-old Mary Duke is a widow of Adol Kang Makwei, an SPLA soldier who died during the 21-year Sudanese civil war. Speaking in Dinka language, Duke says ever since South Sudan gained its independence, she has struggled to raise her children without any support from the government.
The orphans and widows like me have been neglected by those who are alive. I lost my husband during the liberation struggle, and I didn't grieve so much because I knew he sacrificed his life for our freedom. But ever since the country gained independence, widows and orphans were neglected by the government. I have been struggling to feed and pay school fees for my children without government support.
South Sudan commemorates July 30th every year, the day SPLA leader Dr. John Garang died in a helicopter crash on his way home from Uganda in 2005. The day is also marked to remember those who died fighting for South Sudan's independence. Duke says unless the government provides support for widows and orphans of the martyrs, Martyrs Day is meaningless.
Unless the president tries by all means, despite the challenges facing him, to make sure the widows are supported, I don't think celebrating Martyrs Day every year means much to us. Let the country's leaders rethink how this country came to where it is today. Let them remember their brothers who sacrificed their lives for this country. Some of these soldiers who died have families and they need support.
Another widow, Awuri Chol Adol, says she lost her husband, Simon Ateng Alirkwang, a year after the civil war broke out between Khartoum and the Sudan's People Liberation Army in 1983. Speaking in Dinka, Adol says the government has done little to honor those who died during the war.
There has not been much support by the government. What I cannot deny is that they registered me in the police as an officer, but still, the salary from the police is not enough to send my children to school. I have been doing a business in second-hand clothes, and that is how I managed to pay school fees.
Article 23 of the South Sudan's Transitional Constitution, Section 203, stipulates that among the powers of the national government shall be the rehabilitation of and benefits to disabled war veterans, orphans, widows, and care for the dependents of deceased war, fallen heroes, and heroines. South Sudan does not pay benefits to widows, war veterans, dependents, or orphans. Brigadier General Lam Fol Gavriel, a spokesman for South Sudan Defense and Veteran Affairs Ministry, told South Sudan in Focus that Defense Minister Angelina Tench would commend such comments after her meeting yesterday. Repeated calls to Gavriel seen yesterday have gone unanswered. In 2018, President Salva Kiir set government in action to care for the widows, orphans and wounded heroes of the war was, in his words, a mistake and not deliberate. He apologized to the families of the martyrs for the failure of the government to support them and ask them to remain patient. In a Martyrs' Day speech last week, Kiir said he would act on the complaints of citizens who should be receiving benefits.
Fellow citizens, as your leaders, we are likewise happy to receive and act on your concerns when presented in a constructive manner. We consider your input as a crucial guide for us as we steadily implement the revitalized agreement.
In 2015, South Sudan Defense Ministry created a pension program to support families of martyrs. That same year, the National Parliament held a hearing on a bill to improve the welfare of families of martyrs. The Martyrs Family Fund Bill was presented to Parliament but was never brought up for a vote. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
In Sudan, hundreds of families were displaced from their homes in Eastern Nile suburb of Khartoum State after heavy rains destroyed their houses over the weekend. Some of the residents of the area are calling on the government to construct drainage system to prevent flooding during rainy seasons. Authorities in Khartoum have formed an emergency committee to provide help to the affected families. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Many Eastern Nile residents say they could not celebrate Eid al-Adha due to heavy rains, which destroyed nearly 200 houses, leaving hundreds of people standing out in the open without shelter. Ahmed Alamin Meki, a resident of Khartoum's Al Jurev East neighborhood, says his three-roomed house is filled with 25 inches of water, forcing his family of six to relocate to a nearby dry place. Speaking in Arabic, Alamin blames authorities for failing to maintain local infrastructure and open up drain channels to allow water to flow away from neighborhoods.
Every rainy season, we don't see any clear plan from the government with regard to this matter. And every year, we keep experiencing the same thing, which has been repeating itself since 1988. To resolve this does not take much. They should just open up drainage channels, and roads should be tarmacked.
Resident At-Tahir Hassan Abdin, a father of four who resides in Khartoum's Hayusif neighborhood, says his two-week-old baby, elderly mother, and other family members were forced out of their house due to flooding. Speaking in Arabic, Hassan says authorities should consider channeling rainwater for agricultural projects rather than wasting it.
Whenever it rains, the water stays for months in Al-Maigoma, Hillet Kuku, and Hayusif. There is a real need for drainage channels in this area. Why can they do it? We are tired of being victims of floods every rainy season.
Besides urging the government to channel rainwater away from homes, both Lamin and Hassan are calling on humanitarian agencies to provide assistance to the affected families. Khartoum State authorities formed an emergency committee to discuss how to rescue displaced families. Speaking to reporters on Sunday, the Secretary General for Khartoum State, At-Tayyib Sheikh, said local officials have donated material support such as medicines, mosquito nets, and plastic sheets to some of the affected families, which he says will be distributed soon.
We have instructed all concerned authorities, including the Minister of Infrastructure, Civil Defense, and our partners in voluntary aid organizations, to put together some items and tools and immediately intervene to rescue the situation of our relatives who have been affected by these floods.
Speaking in Arabic, Al-Himedi Ahmed, the director of the Civil Defense Department in Khartoum, says his team has arrived with trucks and cranes to help relocate some families and to open up drainage channels.
We are pulling all our efforts together to immediately take action for our people in Umdawamban, where there have been heavy rains. We have visited the area along with other concerned authorities and witnessed the damage. We have our team on the ground to try to assist the affected families.
Sudanese Meteorological Authority officials are warning citizens to take precautions as heavy rains are forecast in many parts of the country in the coming days. Heavy rains have inundated parts of eastern Sudan such as Kassala, Gadarif, and Blue Nile region. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Last month, Sudan's Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok appointed a group of civilian governors to lead each of Darfur's five states as part of Sudan's transitional government, which includes both civilians and military figures. One of the new civilian governors is Adeb Yusuf. Yusuf is from Darfur, but during the administration of former President Omar al-Bashir, Yusuf had to flee his home and gain political asylum in the United States. While in the United States, he earned a PhD at George Mason University School for Conflict Analysis and Resolution near Washington, D.C. After Bashir fell from power last year, Yusuf returned to Sudan amid protests calling for a civilian government. He has remained in Sudan ever since, doing research and peace-building activities until last week, when he was appointed governor of Central Darfur State. My colleague Jason Patenkin spoke to Yusuf about what it is like to go from being on the run to running a state government in Darfur.
I feel happy that I'm a governor, and my happiness is for many reasons. Among them, I'm going to help the people in Darfur.
Now, you are a citizen of the United States. You came to the United States as a refugee many years ago after fleeing violence and threats in Darfur. How does it feel to now be able to return to your home in Darfur as a top government official?
Yes, it was true that I was chased by the previous government. After they put me in jail in Sudan, and they attempt to assassinate me, and that is why I was forced to leave to the United States to seek for your protection. When I came back home, I was thinking about this from different point of view. One, we want like a civilian government that can respect human rights and human value, human dignity. And that is what I'm gonna apply the value of humanity. I will never accept this random arrest built on revenge, and I will stand for human value and human right principle.
Your appointment comes at a very tense time in Darfur. In recent weeks, dozens of people have been killed in attacks throughout much of the region. There was an attack in Mesteri village in West Darfur state that left about 60 people dead. Another attack recently in South Darfur state that left about 20 people dead, and other attacks have taken place in North Darfur state. Can you talk about what you're going to do as governor in this very difficult time for Darfur?
I think it was the right time, and that is why I was appointed as the governor to help with the conflict resolution skills that I learned in the United States. So it is a critical time full of tragedy. But at the same time, I have the knowledge, the capacity, the ability, and the willingness to help the people. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to work with others in order to bring peace and security to Darfur.
Now, looking at the government's response to these killings in Darfur, the prime minister said that they would send troops to control the situation. Some of those troops have arrived. Do you have any update?
Troops. Some of them, they arrive, other of them, they are on their way, and they are going to different states in Darfur. Few of them, they are going to stop in central Darfur. Many of them, they are going to west Darfur, and the rest, they are going to south Darfur. Right now, as I'm speaking, the violence in central Darfur has decreased, and I've been working in central Darfur for more than a year. Trying to establish human rights groups, trying to establish peace committees. And I think this is what helped in decreasing the violence in central Darfur. As I'm talking, there is a bloody violence in western Darfur and in south Darfur, but there's no conflict or clashes in central Darfur.
Last of all, Sudan's transitional government, which came to power last year, is a mix of both civilian leaders like yourself and military leaders. On the military side, that includes General Mohamed Hamdan Daglo, who is also known as Hemeti. He's the leader of the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF. Now, the RSF is accused of actually carrying out many attacks in the past in Darfur against civilians. Now that you are part of the transitional government, how do you plan on working with these military leaders, including the RSF, who have been accused of violating human rights?
In fact, the headquarters of the Rapid Support Forces are here in Khartoum. Commander of the Rapid Support Forces is the deputy of the Sovereignty Council. So he has a presence here in Khartoum, and this has become a reality. What I'm going to do, I'm going to help the Rapid Support Forces with a package of peace building and peacemaking activities. I'm going to help them with human rights trainings to respect human rights, human being. And that's what I'm going to work to reform the Rapid Support Forces.
That was Adeb Yusuf, Governor of Sudan's Central Darfur, speaking with my colleague Jason Patinkin. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, breast milk is very important for babies. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
why do you think more young people are turning away from farming?
You know, for you to farm, to be a farmer, you have to wait. I'm waiting until, you know, these guys, they don't want to wait. They want the money now. They don't want you to maybe you plant your corn or maize or yam, and you have to wait till maybe probably like how many months before it germinates and before you can even harvest.
Maybe because they feel or they view farming to be an old occupation or vocation that I'm mostly for the villagers. But then I feel farming is one that I know you can generate money from.
In most cases, young people in Africa think white-collar jobs are the most earning. But in the real sense, it's the reverse.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday health segment, we look at the importance of breastfeeding during COVID-19. The World Health Organization promotes the benefits of breastfeeding and says it is safe for mothers who have COVID-19 to breastfeed their babies. WHO tells VOA formula marketing companies are involved in dirty tricks, even publicizing false information about COVID-19 to sell their products to mothers. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
6 months ago, when the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a public health emergency of international concern, there were fewer than 100 cases and no deaths outside China. WHO reports the number of cases globally has surged to more than 17.5 million and deaths have increased to nearly 700,000. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says states have to remain permanently vigilant and not take the virus for granted. In the past week alone, he notes several countries that appear to be past the worst are now contending with fresh spikes in cases.
We have also seen how some countries, regions, or localities that had a high number of cases are now bringing the outbreak under control. It's not easy, of course. When leaders step up and work intensely with their populations, this disease can be brought under control.
And when that happens, Tedros says it is important that governments keep safeguards and monitoring in place. He warns lifting restrictions too quickly can lead to a resurgence. The WHO chief says progress is being made in developing safe therapeutics to treat people infected with coronavirus. He notes several vaccines currently are in phase 3 clinical trials. He agrees that great hope rests in having safe, effective vaccines that can help prevent people from infection.
However, there is no silver bullet at the moment, and there might never be. For now, stopping outbreaks comes down to the basics of public health and disease control. Testing, isolating and treating patients, and tracing and quarantining their contacts. Do it all.
The World Health Organization urges people to wear masks, which it says are a key tool in efforts to stop the virus. It says people who wear masks protect themselves and others from becoming infected. This week, the WHO and partners are launching a so-called mask challenge. Tedros says people are being asked to send photos of themselves wearing a mask in a show of solidarity in the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This week is World Breastfeeding Week. For more, VOA Adam Phillips spoke to Toyin Adewale Gabriel of the FHI Solutions Health Organization in Nigeria.
Well, as you know, the COVID-19 pandemic situation is unprecedented. At first, there was initially some confusion for mothers in relation to breastfeeding and COVID. Also, there was a significant drop in attendance at clinics and also for immunization because mothers felt that coming to the facility put them at risk of infection. But then a lot of work has been done with new guidance says that once you follow the protocols, wearing of the face mask and also making sure that the hands are washed, it's safe to continue to breastfeed. So gradually, as the restrictions have been eased in Nigeria, there's also been a corresponding increase at the facilities.
So there is no transmission of COVID through breast milk itself?
No, there is no evidence that there's COVID transmission through the breast milk. But breast milk is a baby's first immunization. So it's very important to also ensure that mothers continue to breastfeed their babies.
Tell us again why breast milk is so important.
Breast milk is medicine. It has all the nutrients that the baby needs to keep growing for the first 1,000 days of life. And it's very, very important that mothers and families maximize the benefits of breast milk, especially in this COVID-19 pandemic, to provide the most immunity against disease they can provide for their babies.
Of course, the economic impact of COVID has meant widespread economic dislocation, along with fear of famine.
Well, you know, the National Bureau of Statistics have done some studies on the economic impact of the pandemic on livelihoods. And you can see the inflation since May has been growing month by month. Things are extremely expensive, but breast milk comes cost-free. It's available. And the science is out there that even when the mother does not have enough nutrition for herself, she's still able to provide enough breast milk for her baby. And so the family is free of the cost associated with infant formula, which is very expensive, you know, and it's not advised.
I know that organizers for this year's World Breastfeeding Week have linked environmental awareness with their normal recommendations in favor of breast milk.
Yes, the thematic tone for this year's World Breastfeeding Week is about breast milk in support of the environment. And we do know, you know, the breast milk substitutes from the production to the packaging process to landfills and environmental pollution.
Speaking of infant formula, I'm told there was a significant ramp up in corporate marketing of formula during the days when people were not so sure that babies would not get COVID through breast milk.
That's correct. And there's been a lot of international effort to push back against the aggressive marketing. If you are going to do a donation, it should not be branded. But in this context, because of the panic, a lot of marketing was going on.
Through radio and TV and other media?
Not on the media, but through so-called humanitarian efforts, donations of branded breast milk. You know, so it was time to make a public statement on the need to comply with the code.
That was Toyin Adewale Gabriel speaking to my colleague, Adam Phillips.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19.
physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this rainy Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Akun Farhan by Zaidan Ibrahim. Listening to Zaidan Ibrahim with the song Akun Farhan. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.